Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for In the News and American Stories, coming up after As It Is.
Hello again, and welcome to As It Is. I'm Jonathan Evans in Washington. Today on the program, we will hear about concerns and progress in efforts to provide education in Africa. But first, we report on changes to the U.S. college entrance exam called the SAT. Those changes could make the test more difficult for foreign students. The organization that administers a widely used college entrance test called the SAT will change the examination in 2016. The not-for-profit College Board announced that it no longer will test students on rarely used words. Students also will not be required to provide a written work called an essay. And the new SAT will include passages from American historical documents or from writings on issues like freedom and human rights. The SAT is one of two major tests for entrance to American colleges and universities. The other test is called the ACT. Test scores help colleges decide if a candidate can succeed at their schools. More than 2 million students take the SAT yearly. They include about 100,000 foreign students. Nigerian student Peace Umoru is in her first year at Howard University in Washington, D.C. Ms. Umoru says she thinks the new test will be easier because of the removal of rarely used words. She says that is the hardest part for international students. The College Board says words on the new test will relate to usage. Students will be asked to identify the meaning of words based on the way they are used in reading passages. Eddie West is with the National Association for College Admission Counseling. He says the new test will better predict a student's performance in college.
Personally, I feel like the changes are moving the test in a more positive direction insofar as they link up with skills and abilities that students will need to succeed, not just in getting into a college or university, but in succeeding once there.
But Mr. West says the addition of material related to American historical documents could make the test harder for international students.
It's going to be relatively uncommon for an international student to be really conversant with the Declaration of Independence or Martin Luther King Jr.'s work or anything else along those lines that might be cited in the test.
Jamaican Shanique Campbell is a second-year student at Howard University. She called the new material very scary for international students.
We're already faced with knowing that we're taking an American-based exam. And so there are a lot of things that we are not prepared for in terms of what to expect on that exam, cultural references that we won't be able to identify with.
Bob Schaefer of the National Center for Fair and Open Testing spoke to VOA by Skype.
Students from other countries, particularly those who did not grow up learning English, are at a double disadvantage. The test is in a foreign language for them, and they didn't get test prep, so it's harder.
But the College Board says it has formed a free online educational service. Khan Academy will provide preparation material linked to the newly designed SAT. You are listening to As It Is from VOA Learning English. Opportunities for education remain an important issue in many countries in Africa. Educators in Africa are concerned that some countries will not meet goals set by the United Nations for 2015. Geraldine Watson has this report.
African educators and civil society group members gathered recently to discuss the United Nations Millennium Development Goals on education. They said a UN report shows progress, but they also said some countries cannot meet the goals by the targeted date next year. The educators and other experts said those countries cannot increase education and gain equal treatment for boys and girls in schools by 2015. They noted that this is especially true of sub-Saharan nations. The meeting in Yaoundé, Cameroon, included experts from 43 African countries. Jean-Pierre Edzoa is an official of Cameroon's Ministry of Social Affairs. He describes the life ahead for uneducated children as a disaster. He says the government is doing everything possible to make parents understand that they harm their children if they do not send them to school. The World Wildlife Fund for Nature is best known for its work for the environment, but it is also helping efforts to increase school attendance. Hansen Ngeforti is director of the WWF office in Cameroon. He said it is now centering its efforts on education because so many children do not go to school. That sound invites Baka and Embaroro ethnic groups in Central Africa to send their children to school. They still live the traditional lives of their groups, and official education is not of top importance for them. Mr. Ngeforti notes that the Baka people have been asked for their ideas about how to get children into schoolrooms. Boy Raruku is with the group Africa Network Campaign on Education for All. He says the meeting in Yaoundé provided a chance to look to the future.
The sustainable development goals that civil society has been pushing for is that beyond 2015, before 2015, the world leaders did commit to Millennium Development Goals, which were to be achieved by 2015. So a number of the goals that they committed to are coming to an end in 2015. Beyond 2015, what should it be like?
Beatrice Njenga heads the Education Division at the African Union Commission. She says educators are preparing a 50-year education program for Africa. She says they need financial help and central planning.
If you want to support Africa, you need to understand Africa's very well articulated vision as the priorities in education for 2063, so that all investment is towards a common vision. So unless you actually sit and put in place strategies to achieve what we need to achieve in 50 years, it will be 2063 and we'll be still talking about the same thing.
The education experts reported some good news. They said rates of poverty have been decreasing and more children are in school. I'm Geraldine Watson.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow for another As It Is. I'm Jonathan Evans. Thanks for listening.
In the News is next, followed by American Stories. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English. Thank you.
the VOA Special English Program, Words and Their Stories. Baseball is America's national sport, so it is not unusual that many popular expressions come from baseball. But first, let me explain a little about the game. Each baseball team has 9 players. The pitcher of one team throws the ball to a batter from the other team. The batter attempts to hit the ball. If he misses, it is called a strike. If a batter gets 3 strikes, he loses his turn at bat and is called out. The batter also is out if he hits the ball in the air and an opposing player catches it. But if the batter hits the ball and it is not caught, the batter tries to run to one or more of the 4 bases on the field. The batter can run to all 4 bases if he hits the ball over the fence or out of the ballpark. Such a hit is called a home run. Now, here are some common expressions from baseball. Someone who is on the ball is intelligent and able to do a good job. But a person who threw a curveball did something unexpected. Someone who steps up to the plate is ready to do his or her job. A pinch hitter takes the place of someone else at a job or activity. A person who strikes out or goes down swinging attempted something but failed. We also might tell the person that 3 strikes and you are out. But someone who hit a home run or hit it out of the park did something extremely well. Sometimes I have to give information quickly, without time to think it over. Then I would say something right off the bat. If someone is doing an extremely good job and is very successful, you might say he or she is batting 1,000. If I say I want to touch base with you, I will talk to you from time to time about something we plan to do. I might say I touched all the bases if I did what is necessary to complete a job or activity. And if I covered my bases, I was well prepared. However, someone who is way off base did something wrong, or maybe even dishonest or immoral. A person with strange ideas might be described as out in left field. Let us say I want to sell my car, but I do not know exactly how much it is worth. If someone asks me the price, I might give a ballpark figure or a ballpark estimate. If someone offers me an amount that is close to my selling price, I might say the amount is in the ballpark. However, if I say we are not in the same ballpark, I mean we cannot agree because my ideas are too different from yours. Finally, when a situation changes completely, we say that is a whole new ballgame. This VOA Special English Program, Words and Their Stories, was written by Shelley Gullist. I'm Faith Lapidus.
I'm Steve Ember.
And I'm Barbara Klein with People in America in VOA Special English. Today, we tell about Shirley Chisholm. She was an educator, activist, and politician.
Shirley Chisholm is best known as the first black woman elected to the United States Congress and the first black woman to run for president of the United States. However, her life was filled with much more than being the first black woman to do important things. She believed in being a person to fight for change. All her life, she worked to improve the lives of others.
Shirley Anita St. Hill was born in Brooklyn, New York, in 1924. She was the oldest of four daughters. Her father was a factory worker from Guyana. He loved to read. Her mother was from the British West Indies island of Barbados. She made clothes and cleaned other people's houses. Shirley's parents had very little money. They wanted their daughters to get a good education and to have a better life. When Shirley was 3 years old, her parents sent her and her sisters to live with their grandmother in Barbados. Shirley received a good education from the British school system. She enjoyed the years she lived with her grandmother. Her family in Barbados was a strong, organized group that believed in education. Shirley always remembered the words her grandmother spoke.
When I was reared in the British West Indies, my grandmother used to always tell me, "You may not be loved by certain forces in a society, and you have to understand why. But always speak the truth."
In 1934, Shirley moved back to Brooklyn. She was 10 years old. She continued to do very well in school. She later graduated from Brooklyn College with honors. In 1949, she married Conrad Chisholm, who worked as a private investigator. Together, they took part in local politics. Their marriage ended almost 30 years later. As a young woman, Shirley decided to become a teacher. She believed she could improve society by helping children. She worked for 7 years at a child care center in the Harlem area of New York City. She attended Columbia University at night and received an advanced degree in early childhood education in 1952. She became known as an expert in children and early education. From 1959 to 1964, Shirley Chisholm was an education official in the daycare division of the city's Office of Child Welfare.
In 1964, Shirley Chisholm's political career began. She was elected to the New York State Assembly. She served for 4 years. In 1968, she announced she would run for the United States Congress. She was elected from the newly created 12th District of New York City. She became the first black woman elected to Congress. She represented a poor area of Brooklyn called Bedford-Stuyvesant. In Congress, Ms. Chisholm was assigned to the House Agriculture Committee. She protested this assignment. She felt it was not important to the poor people of the city that she represented. She was moved to the Veterans Affairs Committee. She later served on the Education and Labor Committee, the position she wanted. In 1977, she joined the important House Rules Committee.
Shirley Chisholm was very different from other members of Congress. She looked different. Her hair was a big cloud of curls. She wore very large eyeglasses, and she had dark skin. She also spoke differently. She had developed a minor Caribbean accent while living with her grandmother in Barbados. Her voice was strong. She spoke with power. She said her greatest tool was her mouth. She was not afraid to say the things others would not say before Congress and the public.
But my friends, I might be strong for some persons in this audience, but I believe in telling it like it is.
Shirley Chisholm spoke strongly for the poor and for women. She worked for civil rights for African Americans. She opposed the Vietnam War. In 1969, she helped form the Congressional Black Caucus. She was also a member of the National Organization for Women. Ms. Chisholm was an activist for people of color, including Native Americans and Spanish-speaking immigrants. She often spoke about cultural and social issues.
Increasing immigration to the United States suggests that we do face new social and cultural problems as these new Americans are integrated into our society. And because most of the new immigrants are people of color, cultural adjustments must be made by all groups in America if we are to learn to live together as one nation.
Ms. Chisholm wrote a book about her life in 1970 called Unbought and Unbossed. She refused to be defined by party politics or racial comparisons. Sometimes this worked against her. In 1972, Shirley Chisholm announced that she would run for President of the United States. Many people thought it was a strange thing to do. Ms. Chisholm said during her life in politics, she faced more discrimination as a woman than as a black person. Shirley Chisholm became the first woman and the first black person to carry out a presidential campaign within one of the major parties. When she announced her candidacy for the Democratic Party nomination for president, this is what she said. "I am not the candidate of black America, although I am black and proud. I am not the candidate of the women's movement of this country, although I am a woman and I am equally proud of that. I am not the candidate of any political bosses or special interests. I am the candidate of the people." Ms. Chisholm did not win the Democratic primaries or the nomination. She said she did not run for president because she expected to win. She ran to make a point. In 1973, Shirley Chisholm wrote another book, The Good Fight. In that book, she told of her reasons for running for president, even though she did not expect to win. She said, "The next time a woman runs, or a black, or a Jew, or anyone from a group that the country is not ready to elect to the highest office, I believe he or she will be taken seriously from the start.
Shirley Chisholm left Congress in 1982 after 14 years. She said many voters did not understand her. She said her influence as a truthful, tough politician was decreasing in conservative times. Also, she wanted to spend more time with her second husband, Arthur Hardwick. Ms. Chisholm went on to teach at Mount Holyoke College in South Hadley, Massachusetts. Years after leaving Congress, she continued to be invited to speak before many groups and organizations. A reporter once asked Ms. Chisholm how she wanted to be remembered. She said she did not want to be remembered as the nation's first black congresswoman. She wanted to be remembered as a brave person, a person who created change.
Shirley Chisholm died January 1, 2005. She suffered a series of strokes. She was 80 years old. Shirley Chisholm loved her country. She wanted to serve all America, not just African Americans and women. Her work for the community of Bedford-Stuyvesant, the state of New York, and the nation continues through the changes she helped make in American society.
America is a wonderful land. There's no question about it. That is why every group from across the waters, try to come to America. I am hopeful. Oh God, am I hopeful before I die that I will see that America will move toward a period of real enlightenment, and that when we are finally faced with the choice of exclusion or inclusion, we will choose inclusion, because that's what America is supposed to be all about.
This program was written and produced by LaJuan Davis. I'm Barbara Klein.
And I'm Steve Ember. You can learn more about famous Americans on our website, voaspecialenglish.com. Join us again next week for People in America in VOA Special English.